Welcome to On Strategy Showcase. This is Fergus in Chicago. A couple of things I wanted to touch on before we get underway with today's episode. First, I wanted to announce that On Strategy Showcase Live, which is where we take the show on the road, and we basically, in essence, we take this show and we put it on a live stage, that we're hoping as various parts of the world begin to reopen safely, that we can begin the process of scheduling these live events in the future. And this is where we take the show out on the road for conferences, for meetings, or for private groups hosted by agencies or organizations or companies. And we take a client strategy case or we take a specific topic and we conduct live interviews that showcase the backstory and the thinking that shaped them. And so we'll interview the client, we interview strategy leads, and it all happens live on stage. We discuss the goals, we discuss the challenges, we discuss the solutions, and then there's a live Q&A. So it's a session that I think can add a lot of value to an existing conference, or it can be something that you build an event around. It could be an hour long, it could be 3 hours long, depending on how it's structured. So if you'd like some more information, you can click the live tab on our homepage at onstrategyshowcase.com. The second thing I wanted to update on is our custom episode series for WARC. It's going to be called On Strategy Showcase Behind the Winning Idea. I'm producing 12 episodes featuring the winners from this year's WARC Marketing Effectiveness Awards. There's going to be 6 categories: customer experience, purpose, collaboration and culture, instant impact, sustained growth, and B2B. So there'll be 12 episodes that fall into those 6 buckets. And the episodes won't appear on this platform. They won't appear on the On Strategy Showcase website or on our podcast platform. They'll only be available on the WARC website, but will be outside of their paywall. The good folks at WARC have agreed to make them accessible at no cost to everybody. So I expect they'll begin dropping episodes in 4 to 5 weeks, roughly. I'll let you know on this show as each episode drops on WARC so that you guys can go check them out. So now let's go back to today's episode. Today I welcome Brian Whipple. Brian is CEO of Accenture Interactive. And as many of us know, to round out its offering, Sir Brian has acquired many strong creative agencies, including Rothko in Dublin, Ireland, Karmarama in the UK, The Monkees in Australia, and Droga 5 here in the US. We talk about the value Accenture Interactive offers them and vice versa. We also talk about the challenge that strategy as a discipline faces in today's agency environment. We also talk about how the executive target for Accenture Interactive's offering has changed over time, and how Brian feels that the culture of the CTO and the CMO are getting closer together, and how CMOs are different in his mind in terms of the sort of new age CMO target and the more traditional target, and how he sees each of them in terms of opportunity. I think it's an important thing for us all, whether you're an Accenture Interactive size or you're a smaller agency or a smaller offering. I think a lot of these lessons are valuable to everybody. One of the things I thought was important to point out, because we got to pull these things apart, there's a difference between Accenture, the mothership, and Accenture Interactive. Accenture Interactive's competitors are really the large agency holding companies. It's not so much other consultancies. So I think it's important to keep that in mind. I really wasn't clear on that myself, because I kept throwing them in with the Deloittes of the world and others, when I think in reality, it's a different target that they're after. And their target is a CMO now, rather than the CTO target that used to be theirs in the past. And another thing I wanted to point out, because Lord knows it happens a lot, which is it's easy to dismiss, if you're an agency person, it's easy to dismiss these guys as just consultants who don't get creativity or don't get creative strategy. But I think in the same way that consultancies incorrectly pigeonhole agencies as just makers of ads, agencies incorrectly pigeonhole this sort of a consultancy type offering as being incapable of truly creative thinking. I think both labels are outdated. And I think the label of consultancy is outdated when you think of an offering such as Accenture Interactive. I think the real test ultimately is going to be what can be done together. So this is Brian Whipple, CEO of Accenture Interactive. Enjoy. So welcome, Brian. It's great to have you here. I've had an interview before with Accenture's CMO, Amy Fuller. We talked about the brand and all the way it's kind of thinks about itself, the context of its competitors. Accenture Interactive is obviously a different animal. And as I came up as a, and then you came up too, you've been an agency side guy too. I'm kind of excited to have this conversation through the lens of the sort of agency world. You know, most of my listeners come from either client-side marketers or ad agency folks. And whatever that means these days is always up for debate. But I'm super curious about one thing that I've just thought of, which is, do you like the name Accenture Interactive?
Well, we've clearly been pretty successful building this on the shoulders of Accenture. So from the perspective of being tied to and linked to and supported by and strengthened by Accenture, I do like that. I like that a great deal.
Yeah.
It's entirely appropriate and accurate. In terms of the interactive component of it or how the two fit together, it is not perfect, but ultimately, to the extent interactive can allude to the way consumers interact with brands, is in some ways perfect. The extent to which interactive was used in the early 2000s by a number of companies to refer to website development practices and the like. While that is certainly a capability we have at great scale, that is not an ideal representation. But right now, with the brand we have in the marketplace, I'm pretty confident that it can represent the robust reimagination of experiences that we're focused on.
So for those who are not familiar with Accenture Interactive, can you tell us about its offering and its scope?
Sure. Well, it's evolved, of course, as we've grown pretty significantly over the last 10, 11 years or so. For the last couple of years, and including now, we are pretty laser focused on experience reinvention. And I'll talk a little bit about what I mean by that. I'm not talking about navigation of an app or a website. I'm not talking about customer satisfaction surveys and the callback and the email you get today after virtually every transaction you make with everybody. I'm instead talking about how you experience a particular company or brand holistically through on-premise and digital and mobile and their advertising and their service, what that collective picture looks like in terms of how you experience that brand. And fundamentally, the company's built on one premise. And that premise is that brands are really no longer built by advertising, or certainly not by advertising only. They're built by how consumers experience the brand, as evidenced by the fact that some of these digitally native companies that have very crystal clear, meaningful brands, the Netflixes of the world, the Ubers of the world, they didn't do any advertising. You didn't see Super Bowl ads for them when they started. Those brands were built through a reimagination of what that experience could be.
So if I look at some of the examples you use, like Netflix, these were organizations that were bringing a very unique or uniquely delivered value to consumers. So they're sort of the rare example of brands that were created by virtue of the sort of PR and the publicity that was connected around their releases and the various stages of their growth. But that's not a common thing. But what about all the other brands that you interact with, that we all interact with? There is the need, not for advertising, but there is a need for marketing. Would you agree with that?
Oh, not only would I agree there's a need for marketing, I would agree there is a need for advertising. It's just that need now exists in the context of being one of many important elements of rendering an experience for that consumer. I do believe a lot of those digitally native companies were built through how someone experiences that brand, through its ease and transparency, and how it makes their life just a little bit more functional, more efficient, in some cases, more meaningful. And the kind of paradox we're living in today is that while some of those brands have been reimagined, some of those experiences have been reimagined through brands. Like, for example, Netflix has completely reimagined the home entertainment, or perhaps just the entertainment experience of film and TV.
Right.
It's totally different than what it was when I was a child. Completely different. It is a complete reimagination of that experience. But there are still so many experiences in our everyday lives, global experiences, for consumers around the world, for citizens, for patients, that really have not been touched at all. And it's really quite odd. And we're focused a lot on exploring why that is and helping address that in the global market.
So when I look at Accenture Interactive, I think about it as sort of, and I think you've also described it this way, it's like part consultancy, it's part agency, it's part IT firm. Does the part consultancy come from Accenture, the mothership, when you're in an engagement with a client, or do you have those sort of that part consultancy talent within Accenture Interactive?
It's clearly strengthened by Accenture from a resourcing standpoint, but we absolutely have all those elements inside Accenture Interactive, mainly because you can't effectively serve a client around experience reimagination without having, for example, deep industry expertise that might come from people with a consultative background. But you also need technology expertise and the marketing agency expertise in order to render these experiences. You know, we have people that are, you know, everything from designing wearable experiences and soldering circuit boards and looking at facial recognition for the vending machines of the future, and all the way through more the traditional ad campaigns that would support these types of new experiences, and the business consultation skills that would say, what is the value this client can unlock by doing so? So without any of those three pieces of the pie, you kind of fall short in rendering that. So it's really not an option for us to not have all three.
So it's curious because, you know, agencies have always sort of traded on the development of marketing materials, right? So it was creative ideas or it was campaigns or whatever it was. And there was never a desire to sort of go further down the channel. Although it's always been a complaint by agencies and a pet peeve of mine that we've always said we can't really track effectiveness because we don't have eyeballs on the rest of the channel. We don't have an understanding of how other aspects of it are influenced. But it seems to me that you guys were trying to get that entire channel under one roof. Agencies never tried it, but that now consultancies are sort of what we might describe as going up channel with it. How do you think about that? Why did you feel you needed that agency component to give you sort of eyeballs up and down the channel? Or would you define it differently?
Well, I have two thoughts in what you're saying there. The first is that the advent of digital was in many ways the great equalizer, where you've got a lot of real-time feedback in terms of who sees what and who does what with what they see. And, you know, in the historical land of broadcast and radio advertising and the like, you know, that was sort of the holy grail that, you know, we never found, as you correctly point out. So it's much better now in digital. And when I look at the second part of your question in terms of what these broader agencies have tried to do, you know, there is still a great market out there now for advertising. And there's a great market out there for those that are experts in media. There's also a great market out there in people who are e-commerce technology experts. But what we specialize in is the big, hairy, audacious, complicated projects for clients where you need all of those things kind of on one team. Traditionally, those were considered agency, and we could even have a discussion as to what is an agency and what isn't an agency. You know, that level of marketing expertise is essential. The other point I'd make that specifically gets at your question, marketers need people, humans, that understand the way they think, also understand their culture and the way they talk, the way they read, the way they emote. It is fusing together, but the marketing culture and the technology culture are getting closer and closer together. But there is still a little bit of a difference in terms of how clients buy on the IT side versus how they buy on the marketing side. They're coming together, but we're not quite there yet.
So how are they different, or or what do they share in common?
Traditionally, and I would say still the case from a leaning that way perspective, IT buyers are often focused on efficiency and cost reduction, whereas marketing buyers are typically, you know, maybe by the 70-30 rule, focused on customer acquisition, growth, retention, essentially growth metrics.
Right.
And it takes the world of redefining experiences, which include IT and marketing campaigns and new product development, that tie all those goals together for essentially creating value for those client shareholders, rather than looking at one side of that income statement equation.
You obviously see value in advertising agencies. You've done some
for sure
major acquisitions. The biggest, I think, most famous one in our world has been Droga5. And you see that they bring value to your business. How would you define the value that they bring to Accenture Interactive?
Yeah, tremendous value. And it's not just Droga5. We have other very deep brand creative skills, such as the deal we made with Karmarama in the UK, and several others in Europe and other places in the world. The value really doesn't come from advertising per se. The value comes from being experts at thinking creatively. These people are some of the best in the world at looking at client problems and thinking about how consumers see that brand, see that service or product, and reimagining ways that they could see it and looking at the potential. Now, these isolated agencies, if left alone or separate from someone like Accenture Interactive, would likely struggle to bring that vision to reality. But they are just tremendously skilled at ideating the art of the possible and what could be, and what could be a future relationship of a consumer or a citizen or a patient with a particular brand. It's really more about creativity and creative thinking than it is about advertising.
Why do you think agencies have had such a tough time selling strategy as a service? I mean, it's a tough thing for us to even get it paid for in client relationships and on assignments and on new scopes for new projects, let alone build credible practices, although many agencies have tried this, to build credible practices within the agency itself. Why is it such an uphill battle, in your opinion?
In my opinion, I think it has a lot to do with the fact that a business strategy today must include technology. It is extremely hard to have a brand strategy that is largely predicated on traditional marketing principles that doesn't have a technology component, whether it be how you interface with that consumer through all the digital advertising platforms or through commerce, through social media. All these things and the learnings and the efficiencies built therein are all very advanced technologies now that are constantly evolving. So if you happen to have a strategy practice that is really up to date and knowledgeable about all of those marketing technology features and services that affect your client's business, I think you're going to be well positioned to sell that as a strategy practice. Absent that, it's going to be a struggle, because today's world it's not just marketing. It is marketing technology built in. So you have to have a lot of deep expertise in that. And it's still developing. I don't think a lot of the traditional strategy houses or the strategy sides of the traditional agencies, I mean, they're developing that. And I think it's very good for our collective industry for them to do that. I'm a big fan of that occurring, but I don't think they're there yet.
Yeah, and I think as I hear you describe that, I think of that as being execution rather than strategy. So the problem I think the agencies are having is even getting a seat at the table to have a strategy develop, to give a strategy service. The execution component of it in terms of the ability to execute through technology, I totally get your point. And I understand you need to be versed in technology. But I think that even as strategists from ad agencies, I think maybe what's happening is that we're being further forced into the world of sort of comm strategy and brand strategy. We're not even able to get a seat at the table when it comes to the term business strategy. And I think it requires maybe a different hire. And I don't know whether you even think that agencies as independent entities are even capable of getting into that conversation around business strategy. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's a major struggle for them. I think to accurately answer your question, we need to come to a common definition as to what an agency is and what an agency is not. But viewed from the traditional agency lens, I think that's going to continue to be a major struggle for them as they're organized around separate identities and brands around the globe, and also, you know, focused on brand creative and traditional media rather than technology. And it's not just technology development, it's the management of technology as well on an ongoing basis. A lot of the experiences that are being developed today require a management of those technologies and a constant updating and monitoring of them. Clients are looking for business partners that can handle that part of it as well. And it's just a tall task for a traditional agency that is evolving. And change is hard, right? Change is hard. And inertia is often king. And I am a very big fan of the major agency networks. I think they are well run. I think they add a lot of tremendous value in our marketplace, but they're going to be challenged to do, you know, big, you know, ballpark $100 million initiatives for clients with big technology and technology management components.
When you look at the agencies that you acquire, do you want them? I know it's easy to say, yeah, I want them to be them. I don't want them to become partly us. But I've got to think there is something more you want some of those people to be able to either do or to be able to behave in a slightly different way or to organize operationally in a different way when they're engaging with your clients, Accenture Interactive clients. Tell us a little bit about what you want them to do a little more of.
Yeah, that's true. We are very, as you predicted, very keen on wanting to keep what makes them them and let them flourish in that. But we also are very picky and have a bit of a self-selective process into who we bring into the family. And that word is sort of the key to it, that if you can be part of the family that is focused on experience reinvention versus advertising, that instead of doing that, you know, $5 to $10 million a year advertising retainer, that you want to do that same type of work in the context of helping that client reinvent its business rather than reinvent its campaign. Those are the types of people that fit well with us. But there are also many other aspects that are less about marketing and more about style and trust and transparency. You know, we have big employee platforms on bringing your authentic self to work and the types of leaders we want here in general about, you know, being truly human, having fun at work, not, you know, taking your work very seriously, but yourself not always as much. And a lot of those factors play into it as well from a cultural perspective.
Do you think that the agency model is dead?
I do not think so. Those companies are still growing, albeit modestly.
Right.
So I think that would be, you know, more of a headline grabbing inaccuracy. I don't think they are dead. I don't think they are dying. I think they will continue to grow and reinvent themselves slowly. And I think you have seen a lot of progress. And I know those leaders, those executives are focused on the same types of things we're talking about here. And they will get there. So I actually do not think it's dead, but if you look at the market cap growth or lack thereof, or the, you know, individual share price growth or revenue growth, any of these traditional pure business metrics, there's a reason why baskets of agency companies have been at much slower growth. And it's largely because they've been focused on the individual components of experiences, such as advertising, and not on the holistic experience reinvention for clients.
Yeah, it's interesting. As I look back on the last 10 or so years of Accenture Interactive and Accenture, the mothership, which goes back a lot further, but even just looking at Accenture Interactive, and I've read some information that was kind of cool that said that you really, because you started this, you basically have been at Accenture Interactive from the very beginning, right?
Yeah, within a year or two, yep.
So, and you had been at agencies like Hill Holliday, you'd been at Rapp, so you've got a sense of both sort of environments. But it seemed that at the beginning, the relationship was at the C-suite level. It was really conversations with CEOs and CIOs. Like, it was basically an IT conversation back then. It seems now that it's almost evolved to more of a CEO-CMO relationship. And how has that been? Why has that shift happened? Is it this sort of convergence of marketing and technology that's resulted in that sort of shifting of relationships at the C-suite level?
It largely is. That's an interesting observation. And it's accurate to say that when we started Interactive I'm going to ballpark it at 11, 12 years ago, it was largely focused on digital diagnostic tools that were website and website experience related and less agency-esque, if you will. But that has changed dramatically, you know, through the advent of experience reimagination. The prospect of building Accenture Interactive from the perspective of a guy that is sort of one half business consultant, if you will, and one half agency person, if you will, i.e. me at the time, the prospect of building that on the shoulders of Accenture, I'm like, let me get this straight. I can bring, recruit, acquire, court all of this agency talent, add this to the family, and I can do so in the context of a firm that has the credibility of selling these very large scalable projects where one or two projects are the size of what used to be a whole agency.
Yeah.
And I can do that, and I can do that globally. That sounds like a pretty promising idea. That was the fundamental premise that we could build that. And if you think about it, much of the credibility that Accenture had in the IT area, it's a lot easier to sort of port that credibility over to the CMO. And now, as you accurately described, these are all CEO, CMO, and CIO projects together, the bigger ones. It's a lot easier to port that credibility over than it is when you're working for a brand manager doing advertising work, then trying to get in and sell these things where you're going to have a long-term technology and marketing and agency and social media relationship with this client. It's a much harder sell. So that vision has turned out to be fortuitous.
So I think the naysayers in our industry, and God knows there's a lot of them, right? They moan about the fact that this marriage can never work, right? And I'm not interested in having that conversation. I'm actually interested in the idea of what sort of unexpected synergies existed once you brought these groups of people together. Can you talk a little bit to that?
Yeah, I mean, it's actually been fascinating. I don't really even entertain that conversation, as you said, because the results are just basically 100% contradictory to that supposition. The many positive surprises we've had, there's really been so many, but mainly it's that the creatives of the world are so hungry to work on scalable projects, to see their work live and breathe on a global platform and on a technology platform that can reach millions. And at the same time, you have the marketing technologists of the world that are really so interested in how you get to the emotional buying side of consumers and patients and citizens. And seeing those worlds come together in a room, it's actually fascinating to watch and just listen to that as we ideate for a big pitch or debate the merits of various ideas on what an experience could be for regarding an element in healthcare, for example. And that has been, you know, perhaps we hope that would be the case, but it's just that synergy has been far, far better than we'd expect. And if you look at, you'd mentioned Droga5, if you look at the opportunities that Droga5 has now, because they have the credibility of Accenture. I mean, they always had great credibility, but now that we have the credibility of being able to build almost anything on the back of a Droga5 idea, I mean, that's just goodness all the way around. And that applies globally as well. The other point is really more of that when we serve big multinationals, you have to have an operating footprint that spans where the consumers of the world are. So you need to have practices in Brazil, in Japan, and China, and in the major population centers of the world, in those speaking in those native tongues, understanding those native consumers. And we offer that. So that, you know, is a very attractive thing for the elements of that quote marriage that you described.
Luckily, what's happening in the sort of agency and marketing worlds now is there's sort of an increased emphasis on effectiveness. So we're getting a lot of effectiveness awards. Clients want that. They want to be a part of it, whether it's WARC in the UK or APG or it's the Effies over here. We're enthusiastically having our feet held to the fire a little bit more. And I think a lot of us are, maybe some of us are kicking and screaming, but I think most of us are sort of embracing that idea. And it really is all about that issue of scale, that in order to create effectiveness, it's always been a problem in our industry, the lack of scale and the lack of the ability to own the channel. So it's like that sort of shift away from pure play advertising to this broader concept of sort of marketing's ability to drive the business. Tell us what sort of challenges that even presents. Because, Lord, I want to talk about the opportunities too.
Yeah, sure. I do agree that it is difficult tackling these global projects because, I mean, there's all the logistics about languages and time zones and all these things that we all work through. And when you work for a big multinational and a global rollout, you know, it gets exponentially more complicated. But I do believe it is entirely appropriate and feasible to manage things to a centralized point of view. It may not be to a centralized location. You know, we don't have necessarily like a think tank or war room group per client in one individual location. We stitch together, you know, this is pre-pandemic. We stitch together virtually teams around the globe all the time with various collaboration technologies, including with the client and including with the international clients. And that, I do believe that has enabled, especially now in 2021, the maturity of some of these collaboration technologies is really remarkable. And it's allowing for the new ways of work in the future. And you'll see lots of articles out there on various businesses and are they going to go back to in office? Are they not? And obviously, I think the answer is going to be somewhat of a hybrid approach. And I agree with most executives around the world that signal that. But the things you can do as you tackle these global projects now with a centralized point of view are quite possible now. And I think that's going to be really good for clients in the future.
So I spent a couple of years at an agency in New York, and it was at the time it defined itself as digital or interactive agency. And we had many, many conversations over many exciting days and months about the possibilities of technology. And we were very quickly able to think of ways that technology could be applied to business and to business systems and to sort of experience of customers interacting with the business. But we were never able to execute it. And again, it's partly the issue of scale, partly the issue that we were too early in the market. But there was no lack of imagination in the ability to execute it. And it just seems now that you have that ability to be able to do that. And that's sort of central, kind of center to what you're trying to do is to look at, as I understand it, to look at categories that are sort of laggards. And we all think of many of them, and I'll let you talk to a few of them. Where do you see the opportunity for certain categories to catch up to where others have gone?
Yeah, it's perhaps the area of our business I'm the most excited about, the most motivated, the most engaged, I think about the most. There are just all kinds of experiences that, you know, are head scratchers in terms of they haven't been reinvented, and we're very passionate about pursuing them. And they are across a wide array of industries, but they certainly would include aspects of healthcare. They certainly would absolutely include aspects of retail. Others would be financial services, automotive, and there are others, but there's sort of a center of gravity around those first couple. And I really think consumer experiences, as early as 3 to 5 years from now, are going to be very different. A lot of the reinvention you've seen to date is really not done by the traditionally non-digitally native companies. They're the technology startups that are acquired or bought or integrated. A lot of the innovation has come, the majority of the innovation has come on the outside of the global 2000 companies. And I think the next 10 years are going to be about innovation coming from the inside of the global 2000 companies. And I think with their resources and a lot of the digitally native talent they have on their leadership teams now, that's going to be, the next 10 years are going to be vastly different than the last 10. And I think that will, in part, be accelerated by the pandemic, for sure.
And so when you say inside, are you thinking those are companies that are just beginning to build right now, and therefore they'll have a different sort of point of view on management? Or are you talking about older, more legacy companies that might begin to populate their boards and their ranks with people who think a little differently?
I think we are just at the beginning of the sort of restaffing of the boards and executive branches of the global 2000 companies with what I'd call digitally native talent. We are just at the very beginning of that now. And that is going to be commonplace 5 to 10 years from now. And that will in turn reshape how global 2000 companies innovate in general, and the appetite and the pace for innovation, and the acceptance that it's not reinvent, market, produce, and then sell and service. It's more of a continual evolution of innovate and reinvent, innovate and reinvent. It's we're not building something and trying to make people want it. Instead, we're going to shift to making things that people want.
You know, one of the things I've always struggled with when I think about Accenture Interactive is, who are your competitors?
We, of course, have many strong competitors in any of the three marketplaces, meaning sort of the marketing consultancy space, meaning the brand agency space, the creative space, and also in the marketing technology space, like e-commerce, content management, things like that.
Right.
And when looked at in isolation, I could list a long list of competitors in each of those three categories. When you look at stitching them together for a client, there are a number of companies and networks that will claim they can do that. The business results would indicate otherwise, and I would just point to that. When you add in the fourth dimension of being able to do that at scale for global projects with global multinationals, the number of arms raised in the room, oh, I can do that, they go down and they go down, and then they get the little alligator arm. Pretty soon that arm's down at the side. Our arm is still, you know, pretty high in the air, because we can tackle those big, hairy, complicated projects. That doesn't mean we always do that, because we do a lot of smaller projects too. But that's why a lot of clients come to us. So I think we definitely have competition, of course, on our bread and butter, on the true experience design, reinvention, building the experience, communicating experience, helping the clients manage that, on that healthcare vision of the future, what that retail vision of the future could be. You know, we have less competition there.
When you look at the macro trends in marketing that you're increasingly aware of, can you share with us a couple of those things that you think are opportunities for you or challenges for you as you see it over the next couple of years?
I guess I would answer the question as this. In the executive branches of the marketing world, essentially CMOs or chief experience officers or the like, there are essentially two camps right now in 2021. And it's around at the 50-50 mark, give or take. Half of them have turned over and are sort of digitally native talent and are very conversant in and committed to the world of digital content management and social media and digital advertising, much greater transparency in their media buy, the new age marketing. The other half comes from more traditional brand management who also do great things, but come from more of the traditional relationship with agencies. And they're really trying to strengthen themselves in terms of technology. Now, that client base is where I believe the biggest incremental opportunity is, because companies like mine, but there are others, I think there's a lot, it's a great business to be in now for a lot of companies that help clients. And there's tremendous opportunity to help the executives in the world that come from more of a traditional background and make this incredibly complicated marketing tech world more understandable to them.
I really want to get a sense of who you see as your competitor. Is it the Deloitte offering? Does Deloitte have an offering similar to Accenture Interactive? Or who do you compete against when you're pitching?
I mean, we do come across on the larger assignments, all the very strong advertising holding companies, all of them. And we compete against them on things that are and that initially are agency related. And then things that are more marketing technology builds. There are individual organizations inside some of those agency holding companies, some outside. We don't see the pure play management consultancies as much. It doesn't mean we see them never. We don't see them as much. They're not as focused on experience reinvention. So I would say, if you're going to pin me down, we see, the ad holding companies more than others, but that's because where we enter with clients is very frequently at the CMO, and then it blossoms into a broader technology play. And then, it grows from there.
It's interesting to see how things have evolved over time for Accenture Interactive. So are you sort of done now? Have you sort of rounded out your vision in terms of a service offering? If not, how so? And what's next for you?
Well, we are in a position now where that we were not in maybe as little as 3 years ago, in that we do now have all the tools. There is not some big gaping hole in our capability set that we don't have in order to ideate, create, build, and render these new experiences for the citizens of the world, the consumers of the world, some of which we've talked about here. We're set on that. Now, as new things developed, if holograms become readily accessible, just making something up,
right?
Clearly we would need to add that capability, because that could become a big part of the experience of the future, just like immersive tech is growing right now. So it's not to say that we won't continue to add, but right now we have the capabilities that we need to do this. So we are not done. It is largely up to us, and I am pushing hard for us to take more of a leadership role in helping people and reinventing some of these stale experiences that it's been around forever.
Are you looking for David Droga to still be the cheerleader for Droga 5 and for at Rothko for those original guys, and at the Monkees and at your core technology partners? Are you looking for them to be the cheerleaders? And then what role do you play as a cheerleader to their organization?
Well, they definitely remain as cheerleaders, of course. But if you were to ask the question slightly differently, do you look for them to be the main or the lead or the sole cheerleader for them? It would be definitely not. That is my job and the job of the Accenture Interactive team I put around them. Rothko is a great example of a phenomenally talented team largely based in Dublin, that does tremendous work and has fit in very well to the Accenture Interactive family. And these agencies exist inside an Accenture Interactive family. And some of them have their names still present. Some of them do not. I mean, long term, I mean, the most significant thing is that they're in the Accenture Interactive family, and we are all cheerleaders for them, and we want them to be successful, for sure. And that's not going to change. I mean, we do not look for them to be on their own. Part of what they get out of joining a much more global family is people that can help promote them in circles they haven't been in yet. And that's what we have to offer them.
Brian Whipple, CEO, Accenture Interactive. What a pleasure to talk with you. And all the best for the sort of emergence out of the pandemic. I know it's been good for you, so hopefully it continues to be good. Thanks for coming on today.
It has. We're very blessed, and thank you for having me.
And we'll see everybody in the next episode.